Great, thank you so much. I'm going to start off by introducing our presenters, and then before they come up, I'm going to share a few words, a little bit about a new project that we're starting to work on that we think will interest you all. And then we're going to tell you a lot about the lessons that we have learned in managing the Multi-State Learning Collaborative over the last 6 years. One thing that I'd like to say is that we're used to presenting to a lot of familiar faces, and so we might have a tendency to use some jargon and some acronyms, and I hope that you all just feel comfortable to put your hand up and say, wait, what does that mean, or stop us midway if there's something that you don't understand. And we'd also like to make this as interactive as possible, so I'm sure there's some of you that aren't comfortable doing that, but there's probably some of you that are, so those of you that are, please feel free to stop us if you have questions. So first of all, we have Lee Thielen, who is a consultant on public health issues with a special interest in public health infrastructure. Her recent work has been leading the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, Lead States in Public Health Quality Improvement for the last 6 years, and she's done some recent research that looks at the costs and legal foundations of the prerequisites for the Public Health Accreditation Board. She's a member of the Larimer County Board of Health and the Medical Center of the Rockies Foundation, and she's also on the Grants Committee for the Poudre Valley Health System Foundation. She's the Vice Chair of the Advisory Committee to the Center for Public Health Practice at the Colorado School of Public Health. She's got a bachelor's degree in international economics from Georgetown University School of Foreign Service and a master's degree in public administration from the University of Colorado. She was the associate director of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment for 16 years, and she ran the Colorado Association of Local Public Health Officials for 5 years. Next to her, we have Dr. Leslie Beitsch, MD-JD, who is on the faculty of the Florida State University College of Medicine as professor of health policy and director of the Center for Medicine and Public Health. Before he joined FSU, Dr. Beitsch was the commissioner of the Oklahoma State Department of Health, and he also worked for the Florida Department of Health for over a dozen years. Dr. Beitsch is also on the board of directors of the Public Health Accreditation Board, and along with Lee Thielen, he led the Multi-State Learning Collaborative Project, or the MLC as we call it, for the past 6 years. So we're going to talk to you a lot today about how to advance slides. We're going to talk to you a lot today about the Multi-State Learning Collaborative and the things that we've learned from the 6 years of the project, and share what we think is the rather large impact that this project has had on the field. But before we do that, I want to talk to you about something that we're working on. It's a brand new project that just started on October 1st. And that project is called Strengthening the Community of Practice for Public Health Improvement. We feel that the MLC, which we'll talk to you about, really helped build this community of practice around accreditation and quality improvement. And our next project, Strengthening the Community of Practice for Public Health Improvement, or COFPI for short, we're calling it, is really going to help take the lessons from the MLC and move us forward as a field around accreditation and quality improvement. So the project began on October 1st of this year and will run through September 30th of 2013. It is managed by the National Network of Public Health Institutes, and it is funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And this work that we're going to be engaging in has three main focuses. The first is that we'll be hosting quality improvement and accreditation related open forum meetings. And this is something that we started in the MLC, where we really pulled together practitioners in the field, leaders in the field, national public health organizations, funders and policymakers where we could, who were working on this issue, to come together and share their ideas and share what they were working on together. So we've had three of these open forum meetings thus far, and the last one we held was just about a year ago, where we had about 225 public health folks from 47 states. So we're pretty excited to get to continue this work and hold these open forum meetings. Our next one is going to be in December here in Alexandria, Virginia. We're also able, as part of that, to sponsor the attendance of about 125 people to attend those meetings. Another piece of the work is that we are going to manage a mini-grant program. And what this will do is we'll put out a call for proposals to select 60 public health organizations in two separate cycles of 30 each. And so for about an eight-month period, we will fund 30 public health organizations to implement quality improvement work, and then we'll fund another 30 organizations to implement quality improvement work. The grants are many, so when I say many, I'm not kidding. But one of the key benefits for that is that each organization will also receive the benefit of having an experienced quality improvement coach who will provide about 12 to 15 hours of direct QI coaching and technical assistance to the agencies. The last piece of this project is involving a quality improvement and public health practice exchange. I'm not going to go into detail about that right now because Les will share a little bit about it in his presentation. But basically, in short, this is going to be an online data system of quality improvement projects that folks can access and see online what is all the work that's going on around the country in quality improvement and public health. So this is really just one, this Project Coffee, really just one of a number of different initiatives that are going on right now. We know that our partners at the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, as well as the National Association of County and City Health Officials, are putting together all kinds of neat things around technical assistance to help folks get ready for accreditation, to help folks implement quality improvement. We know that they're releasing some funding opportunities for these. We have the National Public Health Improvement Initiative, which comes out of the health reform dollars of a couple years ago, which is funding all states, territories, and some tribes to really implement performance management systems and look toward applying for national accreditation. The Public Health Accreditation Board has launched. So in September, the Public Health Accreditation Board is actually accepting applications, and folks are going through that process to apply. And so, again, our new project, the Coffee Project, is just one of a lot of movement going on at the national level in quality improvement and public health. And we like to think that a lot of that momentum that we see today was encouraged and maintained by the Multi-State Learning Collaborative Lead States in Public Health Quality Improvement. This project was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and managed by NNPHI, and it was implemented with the support of national public health organizations and partners. So the goal of the MLC was to bring teams together in 16 states to prepare for national voluntary accreditation, to contribute to the development of the National Voluntary Accreditation Program. And so the program has been being developed over the last several years. And the folks participating in the MLC were on work groups, they offered feedback, they participated in the beta test, they did desk reviews of the standards, and really helped formulate the development of that program. And then lastly, to advance the application of quality improvement in public health. So we began with five states in 2005, and we're concluding at the end of this month, actually, with 16 states. And one thing I want to clarify, particularly as we talk today, is we often refer to these as MLC states, and folks assume that that means state health departments. Really, in all of these states, there were partnerships that implemented this project. It often did include the state health department, but sometimes it included the local association of health officials, the public health institutes, and academia. And so one of the unintended benefits, or perhaps it was intended, but one of the unexpected benefits that we saw through this project was a strengthening of relationships between state health departments and local health departments and other public health partners. That's just one of the benefits that we saw. I'm now going to pass it to Lee, who is going to talk a little bit more about the accomplishments from the MLC. What I want to do I'm going to pass around the sign-up sheet. So for any of you who might be interested in receiving more information about the Coffee Project, the Community of Practice for Public Health Improvement, please feel free to just put your name and email here, and we will add you to our list to receive information about the funding opportunities and the open forum meetings.
This is how you're advancing. Well, thanks for telling us who you are and where you're from. And when I realized the extent of your experience in this room, I wish we'd done this as a round table so we could all sit and learn from you in your clinical settings, in your community health clinic settings, and in your public health settings. I noted that there are at least four states, folks from at least four states that were in the multi-state learning collaborative. Ty from Kansas, so I sat next to you in the last session. With Michigan, Washington, and Illinois. Were any of you actually involved in anything that had to do with the MLC? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so you're familiar, and as we go through the presentation, you may want to chime in. It's A-OK, a tie as well. And we're happy that you're here. Jennifer had said, well, I feel a little funny talking about what's next without starting with what we've already done. And we said, no, you have to start with what's next, because some people may not be able to stay through the whole presentation, and if they can't, what's the most important thing we have to talk about? The most important thing to talk about is not what was, but what will be. And so that's why we have started that that discussion, but we will continue to talk about it through the presentation. So there really were two strong thrusts with the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. One was with accreditation, the other with quality improvement, and of course the two intertwine, support each other, and are part of each other. And when we first started with the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, there was no concrete concept of public health accreditation at the national level. That was in its formative discussion. And the concept that really came, I think, from the wisdom of folks at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation was that we could have two things going on at once that would be parallel but also complementary, and that would be to take a look at what states are already doing in this field, which was, at that time, we had three states that were actually doing state accreditation, public health accreditation, and two that what we called public health accreditation-like. It's very similar, Illinois and Washington State, with their standards and review process, and learn from that. And then it just kept growing and growing until we ended up with full of 16 states. At the same time, you had this other thrust going on for public health accreditation. It started out with, well, is this a good idea or not? Then it went to, well, maybe a good idea, so let's explore it. Then it went to, okay, the major associations say this is a good idea, we're going to do it. Then you have to plan for it, and, you know, lo and behold, September, kickoff. And it actually happened. So the two really did support each other. And the reason I put this up there is that with accreditation, none of us have known whether you could create this thing and nobody actually send in their application or their money. We know now that there are folks, there are agencies that are actually serious about this. I heard yesterday from someone who works on the FAB staff that when they got that first check in the mail, somebody who was applying, they were pretty tickled. But it's moving along very nicely. And of course, as we mentioned, Les is on the board, and so he's seeing that all up front and center. But why, if it was built, would we come? And it really has to do with the fact that for many of us, we have felt that public health has been looking for ways to show accountability, and to show accountability in some kind of a standardized way. And I always talked about it as sort of the neighbor test. When I would talk to my neighbors, and they'd say, well, what are you doing, Lee? And I'd say, well, we're looking at whether public health should be accredited. And they said, what? You're not? Because it's an expectation of the public that we had kind of missed. So anyway, this is actually 2008 data. 54% of the public health agencies at the local level said they would seek accreditation. I talked to Carolyn Leap last night, because she now has the 2010 data out of NACHO survey, and she said that number really hasn't changed. What has gone down a little bit is those that said they'd go in the first 2 years, because now they realize how much it involves and how they need to get ready and all the prerequisites that are required and so forth. But the percentage that says that they would seek accreditation, remember, voluntary accreditation, is pretty high, 54%. There was a lot of enthusiasm shown through the beta test participation of local health departments and state health agencies that went through sort of a mock accreditation process to see how it would work. They had far more people that wanted to be involved than they could accommodate. And the national associations have really rallied around this concept of accreditation. So the 16 states that we worked with through we call it the MLC, the collaborative that was on accreditation and quality improvement, was very much involved in reviewing standards, being involved in those committees. Many applied to be beta test sites for their agencies. the national standards have started to be looked at by the states that have had accreditation programs of, wait a minute, why should we have different standards than the national? And they're starting to adopt those. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Identified areas of weaknesses and gaps in capacity through looking at these 16 states and the agencies involved. These folks that were involved in the multi-state learning collaborative really learned from each other. It was very much pure learning, more than probably anything else. And we've seen some of the states set goals that they will say, we want all of our agencies to become accredited. And we are going to show you examples of laws that change to support accreditation. So if you look at, we can't look at the locals and have any meaningful data because we don't have everybody involved in the local level, but we did at the state, it was pretty easy. And so we took a look at what they told us in their final report from the project on what was their intention for the state health agency to become accredited. It's pretty impressive. These states have really, they know what it's about, they've been involved from the beginning, and they're on board. We're suspecting that those 2011 states have already sent in their applications, but that's privileged information, so we don't really know it. But 2011 to 2013 is pretty much what we're seeing with the 16 states that are recognized here. So some of the ways that they've gone about preparing for accreditation, Florida set up like a their own learning group, an accreditation collaborative where there would be players and fans, those that said, we're going for it right away, and those that say, well, we're not going for it right away, but we want to learn with you. We want to be part of your learning community about accreditation. And then Illinois had teams doing, as it did another other states, doing their community health improvement plans. Kansas had a regional accreditation project, 21 counties involved. They've had pilot projects and a collaborative on health assessments. A lot of work with prerequisites in Kansas that was gone through with the support of the Kansas Public Health Institute. Illinois, Michigan, North Carolina, Washington, these are all states that have had state standards, and they're looking at their state standards and saying, well, we want to move toward having ours mimic or be very close to or be the national standards plus the additional ones we might want, such as Washington. Missouri, Missouri was an example of a voluntary state accreditation program, and they have continued to look at how they can be regional players. Montana had seven local. Now, remember, Montana is not rural. Montana's frontier. You know, Montana really is a frontier state, and they had seven local health departments actually preparing for accreditation with legislative support, and by support I mean money. So, what have we accomplished with? Quality improvement. And my buddy here, Dr. Les, is going to take over.
One turn.
Okay.
Well, good afternoon. Pleased to see all of you here with so many different diverse backgrounds. And again, I'll try and not use too many terms that aren't unfamiliar, but feel free to push back. If I do, let me know. In the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, a lot of our quality improvement work was centered around 10 target areas. And these 10 are there before you. Roughly, I describe five of them on the right side as health outcome-oriented types of targets, such as reduce the incidence of vaccine-preventable disease, reduce infant mortality rates, the burden of tobacco related illness in the U.S. But five of them are more about building capacity and process, really more capacity from my perspective, putting together a community health profile or culturally appropriate services, developing customer service orientation in your organization. And those were the activities around which participating MLC states and organizations developed many collaboratives around. And much of what I'm going to talk about is the results of some of the learning that we had related to those many collaboratives. And again, what I would also suggest is that much of what Lee's presented and we'll present a little bit later, and what I'm discussing is really led into or been sort of the background for COFFEE going forward. And one of the things here that the state's really developed a number of successful training models that I think have been really very effective. And not that many of you come from states with also very effective kinds of ways of doing that, but several things became really obvious to us relatively quickly. And again, it seems so obvious now. Why didn't we know it then? Well, so we're sharing it with you in case you may not have thought about it. that the quality improvement in training is very much an adult learner model. And that involves not just inundating people with, here's quality improvement, you learn to use this tool, this tool, this tool. It involves a lot of presentation of didactic stuff, then immediate application. So kind of a notion of just-in-time learning. And for us, you know, that was a bit of a paradigm change, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but very clearly that's an important thing for us. As all of us go more and more to electronic means of conveying information, it's important to remind ourselves that sometimes face-to-face, really sitting down and going over an issue in excruciating and painful detail, sometimes is pretty important. And our evaluators in this project, the Muskie Institute at University of Southern Maine, verified this in their evaluation. But most of many collaborators used a combination of training tools and modalities. So they had some face-to-face kind of learning. They used webinars and other electronic techniques. They visited sites and they gave homework. And the homework was about using those tools right away so that, you'd begin to lay down sort of, you know, some synapses there that you might call upon later. States took a variety of approaches to how they did their work, and I'm hard-pressed to say one is more successful or more effective than another, and so my intent here is just to show a few of them to you. For example, Missouri worked with some very small local health departments, but they worked with them over a 3-year period, so a real emphasis on building capacity. And they did something that I initially will confess in front of a large group of people that I was not supportive of initially. And that is, you know, we had target areas we wanted them to work on, and you saw those target areas. And they said, oh, no, we're going to work on something that we've identified locally. And I said, oh, no, we have 10 targets. And they also said, no, we're not doing that. And so they worked on something in each of these 12 health departments that resonated with that health department. And it seems like, yeah, I get that. And so, you know, that hooked them. And so then they began to really do work. And Iowa and Minnesota, among other things they did Kaizen events. And some of you are very familiar with them. They're sort of rapid cycle, again, in-depth, intense, 2 to 3, well, actually sometimes up to 5 days of work, usually on a process improvement kind of thing. And I'll show you a couple of examples of that. But the idea was to get a quick win, galvanize some support for taking that approach, and I think in those states it was quite effective. And I think Lee mentioned it somewhat, but Kansas and Minnesota took a different way path altogether. There are lots of local health departments in Kansas and Minnesota, and they thought they would involve all of them, or as many as were willing, in their many collaboratives, in their efforts to do quality improvements. So that was very brave. And then Illinois and also Florida took sort of that long-term, big dose effect with several health departments to try and bring them along, starting with the target area. So those are some examples. Now, this is a result from Minnesota of some of the findings from their Kaizen event there, and this is about infant metabolic screening. And all states, by the way, have an infant metabolic screening program, so I'm sure yours does as well. And, you know, just a couple of little connect a few dots here. So there were 61 tasks, you know, initially when they did this, and they managed to get it down to 25. There were 36 handoffs, where it meant that it was sitting around somewhere waiting for someone to do that. They reduced that to 7. And overall, they reduced the time, you know, by more than half, 56% or so, if I had a calculator in front of me. Now, that may not be, you know, and don't presume because that's the end of the 4 or 5 day workshop that they're done with their work. In fact, that's usually the beginning of a longer process. But nonetheless, that's a pretty dramatic improvement. Now, I would also argue that 23.65 days should not be your endpoint. But yet it shows you in a very intense process, you can do some dramatic things. And likewise, this is about the newborn screening detection program. And again, almost every state has one of these things. And the only thing I would point out here is, again, the number of weights, the number of tasks, each reduced by over half. But look at the total time from roughly 2 months down to a little over 3 weeks. So again, a very effective, rapid cycle kind of improvement. And so in looking at these slides here a little bit, I noticed that I say Plan, Do, Study, Act, and then I give you the acronym as Plan, Do, Check, Act. So we treat them the same, and I've done that several times and look at the slides, and I'm not going to be doing anything about that. But we learned that those work great and work very well for us with those five health outcome-related target areas. Again, infant mortality, tobacco disease, and immunizations as examples. It didn't work nearly as well with the capacity, and there's some ways to do that, or the capacity building targets, and there's some ways to do it, and it took us a little time to figure that out, I think. Two examples, Illinois and Washington, which worked considerably on those capacity building targets, they implemented a quality planning approach, and hopefully we can talk a bit more about that. Less reliant on Plan, Do, Check, Act, but more on very meticulous implementation of processes, and it certainly is quality improvement. It just doesn't rely so much on the Plan, Do, Check, Act cycle. This is an example from Iowa. So before I gave you some of the Minnesota things, and this is how to improve the administrative process in completing a contract. Now, I thought at first that it was a human genome project, and I noticed several chromatids that were transformed around the, but turns out that's not what it is at all. And the one on the left, of course, is what their contractual process was like before their intensive few days they spent together. And you'll notice the chromatids and genome is much more organized in the after, although I think it wasn't still at everyone's level of satisfaction. Did reduce it by over half, so it went from an incredibly cumbersome, overly burdensome process to one that was just cumbersome and burdensome. So more work to be done. But but nonetheless, hugely significant. South Carolina, I want to give a shout out to them because they did something that I think we'll be seeing and talking about a bit more, and that is they used the Institute for Healthcare Improvement Breakthrough Series approach in a couple of ways. And this is their storyboard. And the storyboard is simply a way of describing the project that you did, and typically in a Plan, Do, Check, Act, so PDSA sort of format. But they did IHI with both infant mortality and with tobacco, and showed quite conclusively that in areas where there's a pretty strong evidence base about what optimal services look like and how they can be accomplished, IHI model, and I know some of you probably use this, I know some people have used it, it's very effective. I'm not sure it's effective for everything in public health, but it's a really nice model, and the folks in South Carolina did a really good job with it. So Jennifer said I would talk about the public health quality improvement practice change, so now I have no choice. I've got to talk about it. In fact, I'm happy to talk about it. And so the model, and Kasuma Matamala back there did a lot of work with NNPHI on this, so credit to Kasuma. And, a prototype was developed as part of MLC, and going forward with coffee, full implementation of that project. And again, there was some learning there. But so what exactly is it? I think Jennifer gave you a hint. It's more of a searchable database, but in this case, it's about quality improvement kinds of things and projects. And for the most part, those will have been work conducted by health departments of all sizes and stripes. And, in the notion of a practice exchange, the idea about the word exchange implies some kind of interaction, some kind of reciprocity or mutuality. That is, you seek information and then you supply information. So it can foster, really, a community of practice, too, or at least begin to support it. And so our thoughts are here that this will also be, in some ways, supportive of that. And so where do the storyboards and quality improvement projects come from? As you can see from this slide that Jennifer mentioned that when the Public Health Accreditation Board, FAB, was testing its model, they did a beta test with 30 health departments around the country. Each of them did a subsequent quality improvement project. So around 30 or so of those are in a storyboard format, and they would be part of that group. The MLC mini collaboratives as well, there are about 160 plus of those to go into this system. Building the evidence base for quality improvement is another Robert Johnson funded project with 13 projects that some of you here may have participated in. And finally, NACHO Quality Improvement Demonstration Project, also in that storyboard format. So when you begin to think about it here, that's way considerably in excess of 200 projects that over time are going to get into that system, and plus the mini-grant projects we've been talking about with COFFEE. That's a lot of information potentially in there. So if you're a practitioner or just, you know, a curious person and you want to be able to look at this information, you know, the Practice Exchange can sort it and organize it for you in a variety of different ways, depending on quality improvement methods, interventions, and so on. And, you know, it's a chance to actually get feedback and input, you know, again, an exchange of information going both ways. And so what it might look like, apparently you have to be Sally to do this, but if you're Sally and you want to look at aim statements or, you know, the types of interventions that are done, you can look at results, whether it was a breakthrough or not, successful interventions. There are, again, keywords and things that you can look at to give you results. So we're very excited about the potential that holds going forward. Let me share a couple other things about quality improvement that came out of the MLC as well. And, that learning communities and communities of practice are a very effective way to learn in public health. We knew this from other sectors, but it hadn't really been tested at this level with the number of projects and states, and it seemed to work, quite well. We think that was one of the most successful things we did. And so creating an exchange of ideas and a peer network, and that was fostered through meetings and mini collaboratives and so on. For us early on, and I think Lee indicated, MLC went from 1, 2, and 3. So early on, we had states working on accreditation or accreditation-like processes before there was national accreditation. And so it was pretty easy to conclude that, you know, you can do this. It's feasible. And in fact, it has some very beneficial effects that are desirable. And so these processes of quality improvement and accreditation and their synergy together, which I think many of you in this room understand, you can't have accreditation without quality improvement. It's very good to think about accreditation with quality improvement, but you can really transform the field. So, again, just a few lessons here that I think many of you know. And over the years, I can't tell you how many times I've been asked, most recently last week, how do I start? Or where do I start? And I'll show you a slide about where you can start here in a moment. But so starting is that kind of inertia thing. Or, you know, I think about Sisyphus pushing this very large public health boulder up a really steep, unfunded hill. And, it's hard to do. But starting, you've got to do it before, obviously, you get anywhere. And it's a lengthy process. And staff who think they can just do this as kind of an extra task will probably be frustrated. And so it's got to be part of their job, but it has to be part of everyone's job in the health department, you know, ultimately. And I think we'll maybe get there. Building capacity is likewise, you know, starting in maybe one program area or a couple areas. It takes time to build that, and it takes lots of reps. You know, like if you want to be, you know, a great runner like Alan Melnick, you got to practice running a lot. You know, you can't just do it once. You know, big QI and little QI, both are important. You can do either one of those things. I recommend doing one and starting. So this is a Mobius ribbon or loop, borrowed from Jack Moran of Public Health Foundation, because I thought he did such a nice job with it. And so when I say getting started is the most important thing, and someone says, where do I start? The answer is any place. Start somewhere on that loop. And so if you're really focused on, and I realize I don't need to point out, but Turning Point and Baldrige, those are big QI, quality performance management types of opportunities within this ribbon. But then there are QI teams and basic programs where you do rapid cycle improvement, doing PDCA. That's what we call little QI or quality improvement, around programs and activities. And finally, there's also individual QI. What do I need to think about personally to be a better public health nurse, public health sanitarian, health department director, or director of a program, or a staff member of that program? And all of those places are really very reasonable places to begin. Okay, so this is my Sisyphus notion again here, I guess. But the idea is that start testing building your skill in quality improvement around something relatively simple. And as you gain experience and spread it throughout your health department, tackle ever more complex undertakings, if you will. And if you do those quickly, or you run through cycles, you know, one after another, tackling just a little bit of change each time, that's known as rapid cycle improvement. And again, I know most of you know that, but in public health, that's a relatively new sort of notion. Just a couple of things around successful mini collaboratives. So again, bringing groups together and, you know, what seemed to work well for them. Having sessions that were pretty regular and seemed to be pretty important and not varying much from that. Structured models, like I mentioned with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's Breakthrough Series, where they'd have periods of time of action cycles where they were doing work back in their community and their health department. Then they'd have this sort of very adult learner model orientation about increasing their skill levels, go back home and apply that information, and do that with multiple cycles, again, of PDSA. Opportunity to use those tools really to solve actual health department problems. And again, I would point back that, you know, learning tools in the abstract without direct application is not likely to be beneficial. I teach a class for medical students in biostatistics, and I have a hard time getting them to remember them about 2 days later, you know, because they don't use it for much. And so we have to torture them with that. Now, and I don't know that much about biostatistics. That's the humor of this whole thing. But and technical assistance can be provided in a number of ways, as I mentioned before. So this is just as a reminder, and again, not everyone here is in in-depth public health practice based on your earlier introductions. But again, this overlap between accreditation and quality improvement is really important. And that's what the Multi-State Learning Collaborative was about, how those things should reinforce one another. And I think we learned also through the Multi-State Learning Collaborative that using having a community of practice and many collaboratives that there was that sweet spot where all these things came together in a synergistic way to really increase learning. And let me point out just a couple of things related to that. Oh, that's not the slide I thought it was. Okay. Well, what we did see, and I will get to that, though, the mini collaboratives really did develop some improved skills around the small little QI, and I showed you that again on the Mobius loop. We didn't make as much progress around the area of big QI or performance management as maybe we would have hoped. We weren't as intentional in that area, but so the next time you guys get a big grant, think about doing that. A lot was accomplished in promoting readiness for accreditation, as Lee pointed out, and whether it was a community health assessment or health improvement or a state health assessment, state health improvement around quality planning. We saw that in a number of states, and they're listed there. We also made some progress around the area of customer satisfaction and contributed to greater use of evidence-based interventions. We really wanted, in doing your quality improvement projects, we were hopeful that states and locals and so on would use evidence-based practices. And I point all these things out because they relate very much to current FAB standards. And so this is standard, and FAB has 12 domains. Domain 9 is related to quality improvement and evaluation, and this is standard 9.1, and it's about performance management. And I know the print is, well, small for me anyway. You know, it does want health departments and finds it important to monitor the quality of the performance of public health processes and programs, interventions, and other activities. So that's the performance management side of things. Standard 9.2, also pretty important, is more about the little QI, small QI aspect of it, having quality improvement programs in place to improve the activities that you have in your organization. And this is standard 10.1, which is around research, but as it's been applied in FAB, it's about using evidence-based or evidence-informed processes. So it requires that health department use the best available evidence in making decisions and ensuring the effectiveness of processes and programs. And we feel that, you know, what we learned from MLC definitely worked well in those things. I'm going to show you just a couple more slides. In the last 6 or 8 weeks, we have been looking at all the data, and the data compiler is Anuj back in the back there, so shout out to Anuj, all the information we've received from these 160-plus projects, and so examining all those storyboards, examining all the quarterly reports and annual reports and even presentations at meetings, and pulling that data from them, and then looking across those 160-ish kinds of projects and looking to see what are the things we can pull from that. What are we learning from that? And there's some real good news, I think, in there, and there's some cause of you know, things that we can certainly work on in the future. And coffee will be a good vehicle to test some of those thoughts. But first of all, that you know, health departments did a very nice job on using all kinds of quality improvement tools and demonstrated some real mastery of them. And I think the design really helped for that. AIM statements are really critical to getting your quality improvement project up and running. And we learned that AIMs change very frequently in those projects and should change as conditions on the ground also change. We learned that as teams and projects started their work later within MLC, that their maturation and sophistication grew, and that's not an unsuspected finding or unexpected finding. Unfortunately, a disappointment for me sometimes, you know, storyboards are a little bit like a report you have to turn in. And, you know, there are many of those 160 storyboards where I knew the story that was depicted in that storyboard. And unfortunately for me, sometimes it didn't fully reflect all that had gone on. And so we're not capturing that. And so we're not capturing it as well as we might. So, you know, in future, when you guys are doing storyboards or collecting them, you know, trying to really make sure that they capture the full extent of those activities. Quickly, I've got a few hundred more. No, I don't have that many. There were some breakthrough and transformations. And breakthrough usually implies in QI there was a greater than 20% improvement, transformation greater than 30%, or I get those backwards sometimes. And yet that did occur in a number of the outcome-related kinds of projects. They were more likely to be well-structured efforts, and they were often quite successful. Almost all of the projects, they didn't stop when they turned in their assignment to us. They had lots of ideas and thoughts about where they were going with them. And I mentioned earlier the quality planning model fit less well with PDSA or PDCA. And yet there were ways to define it within that structure. And so if you're doing a community health improvement plan, that could be around more targeted things rather than saying that your goal was to have a quality improvement plan. That's not, you know, that's a very qualitative measure, and you might accomplish that, but it doesn't tell you where you are. And so beginning to define it in terms of some quantitative measures is probably helping you know where you need to go and actually guiding your process a bit more. Monitoring and standardization, and you know, once you've introduced an intervention, and you might even be happy with the outcome, you've got to be sure that it continues to be adopted and used. And we were pretty inconsistent with that. Most of the quality improvement projects that were in MLC were new work, things that they previously hadn't been doing or hadn't been doing that way. And that actually surprised us, or certainly surprised me to a certain extent. I thought some of it would be like those Kaizen events that I showed you, that it would be about improving an existing process and making it better. And there was less of that than I expected. And there was a huge mixture of kinds of things. Some of the projects were big and bold, audacious, and unlikely to succeed by the standards they set for themselves. And some were teeny tiny little tests of change. And, you know, there's room for both of those things. And they're both good. And we need to, you know, reinforce that both of those things are good. Best practices, as we know them from Community Guide and other sources, were seldom used, actually. And that was also a little bit of surprise to me until looking back to recognize that most of the things that you find in our guidelines really don't get to the level of detail for a community-related intervention. And that's something we have to think about and fix. It's great to do root cause analysis and other things with your QI team, even if your QI team is composed predominantly of internal folks. And yet there's a problem if you're doing a community intervention and all your feedback and information is from people whose primary source of information is gathered just from the health department itself. So you need information from focus groups and, you know, other sources. And finally, I realize size did not matter. You know, that's in this case, I'm talking only about quality improvement. This is not the punchline of a joke. But size of health departments didn't matter, or you know, it was about, or size of the project. It really didn't seem to make a difference. And structure and management, by that I mean any structure, was not a barrier to success. And I put New Hampshire up there because they have a very limited public health infrastructure outside their state public health system. So there are, you know, virtually no, there's only two local health departments in New Hampshire. As a management, likewise, it didn't matter whether you had a decentralized state, a centralized state, or excuse me, now I'm talking about management, whether it was the project was run by an institute for public health, you know, of which there were many, whether it was run by a state health department or, and we had some other kinds of organizations, all seemed to do, didn't seem to be a factor. And regional teams, my last comment, often struggled because they were working across county borders, county governments, and yet even as they struggled, they often were among the most successful. So it was kind of a mixed bag there. And let me transition this over to Lee, who will take us down our final set here. How do we sustain this work?
Before I chime in on sustainability, is there any dying question, or dying, not dying question, a question that people are dying to ask, Glenn? Please, Justine. What I think there's a number of answers for that, but I'll let Les start.
But it's good that size doesn't matter.
Yeah. yes, in Massachusetts,
yeah.
Very good.
In Massachusetts, I think it's very important that size doesn't matter.
Quantity matters, yeah, in Massachusetts.
Yeah. There are lots of things that do matter. Yeah, I think for me, the thing that probably matters the most is leadership commitment, mm-hmm. if I had a point to one thing. And so it doesn't matter what the size of your health fund is, and I see some people from really large health departments in here. And I see some people from some small health departments. And if leadership isn't promoting this activity, you know, you can still be a champion. You can still accomplish some things, particularly at a health department the size of, say, Chicago's. But it's a lot better if you can do it across the entire health department. And leadership's often the barometer for what we can do that. But we can add to that, and it'd be great to hear from a group after.
I'd like to also add that it takes time. You know, some of our states are working with us for 5 years, and we really saw it coming together in 5 years. So when you say we're going to do a quality improvement project, we got money to do something that's going to be a 6-month project, it's a start. But this stuff takes time. I think that's a huge part, too. We had another question?
You know, so much now is being borrowed from the manufacturing side of things now with regards to use of Kaizen or
Lean Six Sigma.
What I'm interested in is, are there any best practices that you've identified for customer engagement of helping define what some of the expectations should be on public entities or private, it doesn't matter, for the delivery of care, or for the systems, public health systems that the patients expect to access?
I'm going to start that, and then I'll kick it over to Les. And I have had the privilege of being on the board of a Baldrige-winning hospital. And seeing how customer service, customer input, customer attention was part of everybody's job 24 hours a day was just a real eye-opener for me. And I think public health, in many ways, has so much to learn even from our medical care system that's done it right. And believe me, a lot of them haven't done it right. But for those that have done it right, there's a lot to be gained there. And as you said, some of these techniques are coming right out of industry. Lean Six Sigma is a good example, and several folks were using that, and Kaizen as well. But Les, go ahead.
The only thing I was going to add, well, two things. I'm a little concerned that we're borrowing all these tools from manufacturers since we're almost going to be without manufacturing in the United States. So that's alarming. But, you know, I think a number of states, and I would point to the three that I indicated, Florida, or that were in the slide, Montana, mm-hmm. and New Jersey, all really went back to the customers to develop their processes for how do we determine customer satisfaction. And you know, Florida specifically developed some customer satisfaction tools to use. So, you know, these things are all on the NNPHI website, and I would urge you to go there and see. But, you know, the big struggle, last comment on this, is We all want to know how the customers who came in for the service, you know, how did they like the service? The problem for us is, what about the customer who didn't get the service? And I haven't seen the answers yet that impress me that we're capturing that. And we got to leave the campus to get that. And, you know, that's a more proactive kind of, you know, labor-intensive, you know, exercise to do that.
And the other part of it is sometimes the expectation that the customer has for us is kind of low. So what we really want to do is exceed their expectations, not just meet them. And an example of where we, in retrospect, look back at our customers, which were the folks involved in the 16 states, and as I said, semantics matter, and we gave them this term of mini collaboratives. I've just gone through all of their final reports. They never use that term. It's a learning collaborative. There's nothing mini about having 24 local health departments that you're working with, maybe 100 people. There's nothing mini about that. That's an example of where we didn't pay attention to our customers. A little QI. Isn't it a lot better to talk about a quality improvement project? There's nothing little about this project that is taking 6, 9, 12 months of your attention. So we all have a lot to learn on that customer service piece. What I want to talk about a little bit is sustaining the momentum, and of course, that's what we're going into with coffee. Isn't that easy to remember, coffee? Easier than MLC, just coffee. But there are also some other issues or other ways that this work is going to be sustained, and that's what matters. It's great to have a project, but we want to just, you know, a project, you want to change the field. That's what it's all about, is changing the field and improving the field and improving the system of public health. And so we've looked at, you know, how is this work going to be continued? How do we integrate QI into accreditation, accreditation to QI? How do we continue this wonderful network? One of the beauties of the Multi-State Learning Collaborative was that for the first time, somebody who was doing, let's say, evaluation about how their standards process was working could actually find somebody in another state who was doing the same thing. They'd never had that opportunity before. So the network was really key to what we were doing. And very important. So we mentioned that we're going to have these open forums. The first one starts in December. It'll be out in Alexandria, Virginia. And we're very excited about that. It is an invited meeting. And I must say that's a little hard because we know that there are a lot of folks that really want to come, and we may max out. I suspect Jennifer's already feeling she's maxed out. We're going to be engaging, of course, all aspects of public health, both governmental, also all of its related projects. We've talked about some of these projects coming out of NACHO, out of the universities, out of the practice centers that have been funded by the Robert Johnson Foundation. Academia is huge. The public health institutes are very important partners. Of course, the Public Health Accreditation Board. When we say the word partners, what we're usually talking about are the big organizations, APHA, NACHO, ASTHO, NALBO. And then, of course, it's all about keeping the momentum going in these open forums. An opportunity to get together for 2 days to talk about this stuff and to talk about what people are learning. And, you know, as I say, this is really doable. We just put this up to say this is doable. And it's valuable and it's important. And we are capable of doing it because we've seen improvement. We've seen change. And we know that we can continue this momentum. So here's some of the ways that we're seeing this being carried forward. I'm going to talk a little bit about policy, resources, infrastructure, strategic partnerships, and workforce capacity. And policy to me is just so key to making institutionalized change. It's not only starts you going, but it keeps you in place as far as you set a direction and you hold it if you put it into policy. And again, it's that direction we're going. That's why I put the quote up there. So policy can be shown in a lot of ways, and the one we always think about is law. Did you change statutes? Did you get new bill passed? Or did you use administrative code or administrative rule? Same thing. Legislative resolutions are one of the ways we've seen policy related to accreditation and QI, and we're going to give you some examples. Contractual requirements, executive orders from governors, or even from policy set by a state health officer. Incentives coming through budgetary and financial, and agency directives are some of the ways we've seen this. I'll give you a couple examples related to policy. Of course, North Carolina started with legislation. We take absolutely no credit for that. They had it in place before the Multi-State Learning Collaborative was even a thought of anybody's brain. Montana has passed a law that supported accreditation through law, supported a number of local health departments in getting ready for accreditation. Wisconsin has had its Chapter 140 in there, changing that to incorporate accreditation. Oklahoma is really interesting because they had a Senate resolution that was passed that says you will do a state health improvement plan. It's the only example we had of a Senate resolution. Iowa passed its own accreditation law. Michigan prefers to use contracts, again, a legal tool to support their state accreditation, and they are incorporating quality improvement. Related to the prerequisites, community health is in, well, community and statewide health assessments, improvement plans, and strategic plans. Those are showing up in policy as well. And I'm going to backtrack on that one. They're showing up in that one as that as well, in that many of the states are starting to say, using policy as a way to say, we are going to have all these prerequisites in place. Every local health department, for example, might be told that they have to do a state health improvement plan, state health assessment, or excuse me, a community health assessment, community health improvement plan, or the state is making that decision for the state health agency. Sometimes strategic plans are put into law, and often they come out of the governor's office. It comes out of the governor's office or even the governor's budget office and says, you, as a state agency, you will be doing this. And that, again, is done through policy. I did a study this past year on law and the prerequisites and found that 24 of the states have somewhere in law or regulation that you will do one or more of these prerequisites. That was a surprise. I didn't think there'd be that many. So, sustainability through resources. Well, this has been exciting. I can't help but believe that the CDC's decision to fund what they call the NIPI grants, the National Public Health Improvement Initiative, and require the improvement managers, performance improvement managers, wasn't in many, many ways influenced heavily by the MLC and certainly by accreditation. And so federal funding is important. Private funding is a factor. State and local funding and changing priorities using existing funds. So we just talked about NIFI. I won't go into that anymore. You know what it's about. It's real money. I mean, these are big numbers for public health infrastructure. The biggest concern related to this one is continuity. Will there be sustainable funding over time? We don't know. And that, of course, came out of the Affordable Care Act. Also, Prevention Public Health Fund has been used to support a lot of the prerequisite work, as we found out around the country. Local funding, state funding, the funding for state accreditation programs has continued in places like Michigan and in more recently North Carolina. Funding for preparation, we talked about that. And Iowa did something different. They, times are tough, you know, in the Midwest they make do. They didn't go ahead and ask for new money. They said, take this money, move it over here so that we can proceed with our accreditation work. I love the example from North Carolina. This is inspirational. North Carolina got three different private foundations to get together to put up the funding to create almost $5 million center for quality improvement in public health. They already had the example of foundations helping the healthcare system with quality improvement, and they said, why not for public health? And so that's going to endure, and is just a great example. Other initiatives, there have been the Public Health and the Law grants. That's carrying a lot of this work forward. The practice-based research networks, the public health systems and services research, accreditation preparation, particularly NACHO has some new money for that, and ASTHO has been working hard on it. And as we like to say, this is a journey, and we will all be continuing. Infrastructure. I'm not going to go through this again. We've kind of talked about the Performance Improvement Manager Network. I think that's going to be huge for carrying on this work. Public health institutes and academia are continuing to be very strong supporters of all of this work. Some local health departments are doing what you did in Wichita, hire someone who has the capability and the expertise to carry the agency forward. This is less a slide. I don't make up these words.
I really like this slide.
De-siloifying. I come from South Dakota where we really have silos and we never use those words. But he's right in the sense that we have had silo funding in public health and it has not worked always to our advantage. It has worked to our advantage in that no one ever died of block grant disease, but they did die of this or that, the other thing, and so people can connect to it and fund it. But it has not worked for the infrastructure. And when we're talking about quality improvement, we're talking about accreditation, we're talking about crossing all programs, we're talking about the entire public health agency, we're talking about the system, and even I'll use the term now, quality improvement projects are usually done, they start at a program level, a small level, but we have to look at how we do cross-cutting across all of the 10 essential services and across all of the programs. And categorical funding should be supporting quality improvement and accreditation, I believe, and it's a major issue, not just in the federal government, it's an issue with the state government. I came out of state government, believe me. That immunization manager thought they were working for CDC. You know, and doesn't mean they didn't do good work. I'm just saying that was where they took their orders from. And it's an issue at the local health department. I'm on the board of a local health department. It's still an issue there. So infrastructure, we're going to give some examples of how infrastructure has been supported and is going to continue this work because it's been strengthened through the work in the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. We put up the example of the Network of Champions, Illinois, leveraging their NIFI funding, the federal funding, to build their local capacity. North Carolina doing a good job of integrating their funding. South Carolina is a great example of a state performance management system, as is Oklahoma, and New Hampshire and a couple others that are really getting into creating a performance management system that then will help this, again, to stay institutionalized and continue into the future. The national partners have been huge and important in all taking, we're going down this road together, I guess is what I want to say, and that's been really terrific, and that'll keep us going. More flexible use of funding streams is going to continue to be an issue. And incentives. You know, we still struggle when we say, what are the real incentives for becoming accredited? The first out of the chute, hey, those are the ones that are going to do it every time, you know? They want to be first. They want to be the best. They want to be recognized. What's going to sustain it? We're going to have to come up with some good incentives. Again, strategic partners, that this whole process of having groups working in teams together has really strengthened these partnerships. We've seen it very much with the institutes, with SACHOs, with academia. We've seen, for instance, academia, one of the ones I love is, I think it's Purdue that came up with a green belt for public health equality and just, you know, really tailoring things to public health examples. Looking at future partnerships, those are some of the ideas that came out of our 16 states. Building workforce capacity, continuing it. You can't train people and then forget about it. Give them just-in-time training and you reinforce, and we're going to have to do that even with this Multi-State Learning Collaborative coming to a close. But NIFI's going to help with that and the work that is being done with these institutes and academia. Examples are universities that have done great online training. It's there for everybody to use. You know, we've got great examples. You can get those from our website. And, of course, using the existing frameworks for quality improvement. Those are still going to be there. Those can still be used. Here's some examples of really good training that's come out of this work. Kansas integrating QI into training, Oklahoma incorporating QI into position descriptions. Florida, they have, you know, these county managers, which are state employees and physicians, that are in charge of their health department at county level. They have in their performance contracts that they will do the prerequisites for accreditation, that they will have quality improvement. And then these are, again, some ideas for our partners about how they can continue to fund and support training and workforce development. And these are some of the resources we invite you to look at. Jennifer, why don't you talk about these?
Okay.
Thanks, Lee. And this is our last slide. But basically, everything that we have just shared with you today is available on our website for you all to access. The Public Health Performance Improvement Toolkit is really all of the wonderful tools that were developed from all of the MLC states. So that's involving over 250 local health departments, plus the state health departments, plus the public health institutes. So for all of that quality improvement work, they had to develop lots of tools and templates and curricula. And so all of those are posted on this website for you to see at the Public Health Performance Improvement Toolkit. We also have some topical briefs, which are basically sort of summaries of some of the key pieces that we presented here today, of the lessons that we've learned, and how you can take those lessons and use them in your own work. We also have all of the storyboards. I think there's 70-plus storyboards on the website, so if you want to get a quick snapshot of the quality improvement projects by the target area in which they worked, you can look there, and much, much more. So that concludes our presentation today, but we do have some time left if you all have any questions that you would like to ask of our presenters. Yes, sir.
You.
I didn't see both. Go ahead.
Okay. As I understand it, one of the core principles of quality improvement is standardization. Another might be simplification. I appreciate that we come from an environment where we are deeply individualistic, that local health jurisdictions in particular perceive that none of them are like anyone else, and that what exists locally for me is pretty unique. Mm-hmm. That seems to fly in the face of our ability to really create a public health system that will assure the same high quality of services to every citizen everywhere in the United States. And as to the simplicity, I mean, I'm impressed at all of the tools that are available. I'm also intimidated by all of the tools that are available. And I guess this would be my plea, and perhaps you'll speak to this, that the guidance, in some respects, needs to be more paternal or maternalistic. It needs to be, listen, guys, go this route, because you're not going to make a mistake whichever way you go. It's true, but if you go this route, we can guide you and over time lead us to a more consistent kind of strategy. I guess I fear our ability to sell the value of quality improvement process to those who make our decisions, like, you know, a board of health, for example, when they look at us and they say, wow, you're not doing it the way the other guys are doing it. Why should we believe that any of you are doing it right?
I'm going to start, but then you can jump in. You're right on. It used to be said almost with pride, if you've seen one health department, you've seen one health department. Now, some of us thought that was shameful, because it says, I'll just do whatever. Your community might let you get by with it. And it's really not okay. And that doesn't mean that you can't have unique programs. I mean, that's why you have community health assessments, to figure out what your community needs. But there has to be some foundation to this work we do. And related to the simplicity of QI, now that's fun to hear. I mean, I like hearing that. And I think you can pick your tools. You can pick your tools and don't go for the most complex. And there are, not only do we have great resources through NNPHI, but also I'm very, very fond of the NHO website and all that it has to offer. Also, what's happened over the past few years, and I don't know, have you discovered the Michigan Public Health Handbook or Workbook for Quality Improvement? It's wonderful. They've had, 100,000 hits on their website. It's designed to show quality improvement using only public health examples. So it just speaks to the public health practitioner on how you can get this work done. And there have been a few other things that have been developed like that. So it's doable. Don't be intimidated. And I think that's certainly up on our toolkit, right? You can get it from the toolkit that we put on that slide.
And I'll add in a plug that guidebook is actually currently being updated to include examples from all across the country. Embracing Quality, Michigan's Local Public Health Guidebook, And a quick Google search for Michigan Quality Improvement Guidebook will help you find that. An observation that I will share in terms of this idea of standardization versus non-standardization, I think we go a little back and forth on this project in that one of its strengths was that it really was about allowing 1,000 flowers to bloom. And so we gave general guidance to all of the projects, but not real specific guidance. And so the good news is that folks were able to look at their local situation and come up with creative solutions for their local situation. The bad news for us on this side is that we're trying to summarize all of this information and standardize it and say what does it really mean? But what happened through the community of practice is that, you know, the sharing of information from, you know, local health department to local health department to local health department was that there was some level of standardization, even though there were tiny tweaks here and there to the projects and to make them meet local requirements. And so, you know, there was standardization with benefits. There was, you know, some allowability of understanding the local situations. Les, do you have anything to...
How can I add more to that?
Okay, thank you. He never says that. Did you have a question as well, sir? No? Okay, yes.
Well, you know, first of all, related to the guide, it was fun to see where there was that wonderful overlap with quality improvement and the community guide. And where I saw it very strongly was in what they call the change package. You know, you want to improve something, let's take something that's in one of those health outcome target areas like immunization or infant mortality or any of those categories. And what you do is you look at what works. Well, one of the first things that people would do is if you're going to have a change package, you look at where you have evidence that something really does work, and the community guide is absolutely one of those sources. Our problem, by our I mean the collective public health problem, with the community guides, who expect too much. We want it to have all the answers, and it doesn't have all the answers because it isn't attempting to have all the answers, and the evidence is constantly being built. And we frequently have discussions with people about, and I do this as a board member. I've been a board member on health district board where they were very, very concerned about doing anything that wasn't strong evidence-based. And I said, sometimes you have to build the evidence, you know? No, we don't have all the answers on childhood obesity. Let's build some evidence. And I think that's what you want us to do, Shauna, is yes, where we have the evidence, showcase it, use it, talk about it, see if it works, but keep building the evidence as well.
You're not leaving me anything else to say.
Well,
I will add one thing. And, you know, there are two recent Institute of Medicine reports from a committee. Let me see if I can remember the name of the committee. Public Health Strategies for Public Health, Public Health Strategies for Future of Public Health in a Post-Health Reform World, along those lines. So we'll see if we have the health reform part soon, I guess. But, Both of those reports are, you know, one's about measurement, one's about law, and there's a third one that's coming on funding. But one of the sort of themes that's sort of sub rosa in it is about evidence. And it's about not having all the evidence we need, but also the discussion of what is adequate evidence in public health. And so, you know, Lee mentioned obesity, and, you know, there are problems, and, you know, and I'll try not to use puns here, but, you know, it's a gargantuan problem, and are we going to wait till all the evidence is in? You know, we can't seem to make movement on global warming because there's two scientists out there who, you know, who get money from somebody else who say, well, no, we don't have a global warming problem. So, but we can't wait to deal with issues until all that evidence is in. And so some of the discussion is in what level of evidence given the magnitude of potential harm or whatever. And so the community guide, you know, I'll echo exactly what Lee said on, you know, what I'm most impressed in going back and thinking about some of this, and we've done a lot of this since all the data is coming together now, is, you know, I think that the change package, which is what Lee suggested, is we need to be building the equivalent of public health change packages. And so that's more than what you're doing at Community Guide, and yet I would urge you to be that organization that takes on that you know, the gauntlet and that challenge, because I think that's how we take the work that you all have done and then can apply it into our individual public health setting. I wish they all were the same, and they're not. And on the subject of standards, since I'm at the podium here, I can't say, you know, I'm on the FAB board, and so I got to give the FAB message, which is, you know, by God, everything should be standardized. But it's not, you know, standardization, I've also been quoted many times as saying, you know, standardization is the hobgoblin of small minds. And it is. It's not standardization to standardize things. It's standardized so that we have a consistent response to the same problem. But they are often not the same problem, and that's when the nuance of adjusting it to the local circumstances becomes very important. And that's when the community guide may not help us with that nuance. But my God, we want to be able to say across this country we live in that we have a consistent and standardized set of public health services that every citizen and resident can expect to receive and should receive. So I hope I made that.
Would you mind if I had one follow-up question?
I'd mind if she had a follow-up.
Would you?
Go for it.
Sure.
Because the other thing that we have tried to do more of and are learning in graphical ways, the Community Guide has always looked very closely at applicability, and all of our teams actually include real-world people working our tobacco.
None of those fake people.
Lincoln Limehouse, okay. Nebraska, and various people. Our worksite teams have a VP from Coca-Cola and union members. So we try to get perspectives and look at who this applies to. And I'm making people take it out of the articles that are American Journal of Medicine that nobody reads, and actually have graphical structure, a graphical material on the web so that people can go much more quickly. But so we're working toward trying to help the applicability evidence become better. Most of the applicability evidence is actually going to come from real world. It's not going to come from research studies. Hence why we have to learn from all of you. But what I would ask about in these change packages, standardization, we have two different worlds right now. One group says it's the art of doing public health. I have the experience. I want to take the recommendations from the guide, and I know enough that I now can go back and work on my program. Then we have another group of people who says, I want a cookbook, exactly what I need to do and how I make it. And I'd be interested in whether you heard one or the other or both in the work that you've been doing here at Quality and Commitment and related things.
Yeah. Well, we absolutely heard both. We absolutely heard both because there are, you know, we all have sort of personality types and we all have management styles. And there are those that say, don't confuse me, tell me what to do. And there are those that say, hey, listen, I've been running this place for 20 years and I do a darn good job. Community loves me. I know what I'm doing. Don't tell me what to do. And, you know, that's just going to be there. That's just going to be there. I'm going to use my opportunity back on the podium to say something else that I wanted to say about related to the community guide, and that is related to the prerequisites for accreditation. The guide is one of those tools that can be used for community health improvement plans, and if people haven't thought about that, I'd urge them to think about it. It's not the only tool because it'll limit you too much, but it is an important tool for people to look at, okay, we have this problem with whatever the answer is, immunizations, substance abuse, whatever it is. Let's look at the community guide to see if we can get some of our options for how our community will respond from the community guide. I think it's a great source. So.
You know, I mean, so the answer to that question then, and you know, building on what Lee said, is yes. and you know, we need both of those things for. Yeah, I mean, we wanna facilitate the incorporation of evidence. I mean, whether we're talking about, you know, domain 10 and, you know, using best practices. So, you know, we got to meet people where they are. I mean, that's also a QI sort of, you know, doctrine, and we haven't talked about that, but places across this country are in very different stages of where they are. And, you know, the same argument has been going back and forth, when we talk about bringing guidelines into medicine. And, you know, there are, I think the last, we were talking about hypertension, you know, the other day, and there are between 500 and 600 guidelines on the best way to treat hypertension. I would imagine if you synthesized and did a meta-analysis of those, you know, there's some pretty consistent things. But what do I do as a practitioner? I am not going to read all 600 of them. I'm going to do, you know what, you know, I'm going to look to something that I trust. And for us, Community Guide is a very trusted document. And CDC is a trusted organization. And so when you all assemble those kinds of tools and they have your imprimatur and your encouragement, that's important to public health organizations. So get out there and get to work, Sean. I mean, you got a lot to do.
We know.
Other questions?
Go ahead. I know we're at the end of our time, but do you have states that work with public health jurisdictions that really were not interested in UI, and were there strategies that they used to move them along, bring them along, get them on board that you saw to be pretty effective? I could take the answer offline if that's too long of an answer.
Answer the first part of your question. The second one's harder. And the first part of your question is, do we have those? Yes, but what we saw was, and this tended to be by the state. This state's really interested in accreditation, and they're going to do QI because they have to do it too. This state is really interested in QI, and they could care less about accreditation. And that was fine. I mean, we made them work on both, preparing for accreditation and quality improvement. But we could see definitely, you can almost put them into piles. Which one thought that accreditation was where they wanted to put their focus, and they were forced to do all this QI stuff. And those that said, accreditation is just a bunch of paperwork, but we really want to improve through quality improvement. So we sure saw that. But now what did they do, like a state health department that saw local health departments that weren't that into it? Those local health departments really didn't participate. The ones that were participating were the ones that really thought it was worth doing. That's what I saw, but no, did you see that too, Les?
Yeah, the only other thing I would add to that is I think when that does happen, that quality improvement is the hook. And, you know, if you look at the size of, you know, health departments around the country, you know, 60% of the health departments are for populations less than, you know, 50,000 folks. So the vast majority of the 3,000 health departments may really lack capacity presently to be accreditable. And yet there's no size, for example, the 351 or two health departments in your neighborhood, they can all do a better job in some of the work that they're doing, whether they're ready to be accredited or not. And everybody I know who claims to be a health official or work in public health, everybody wants to do their job the best they can. And so quality improvement is a hook for them, I think.
Did my sign-up sheet make it around somewhere? Wonderful, thank you. Will you all join me in thanking our presenters today? Thanks very much.
Thanks for coming, folks.